Welcome to Pyconomy. Here we cover everything from finance, economy, and how it affects you. Please welcome your host, Kyle Talks.
Please, you are way too nice. Welcome everyone to Pyconomy, where we talk about the finance, economy, and how it all affects you. Give yourself a pat on the back because you care about your future. And we all got to spend money. We all got to make money. And you care enough to know how to do that. And welcome you here. Boom. Here you are at the Kyle Talk Studio, Pyconomy to be specific. And this show is all focused on everything about the finance economy. Does it make sense to us? How do we go about that? And that's what all this is focused on. If you're interested in society, business, and culture with cancer research, researchers, published cancer research articles, business owners, voice actors, please check out my main show, Kyle Talks. That comes out mid-weekly, every Wednesday or Thursday or so, with interesting individuals, and we have a great conversation. But today on the weekend, we find ourselves here on Pyconomy, and we have lots of things to talk about. Let me talk about the first thing. And that first thing we want to talk about is my speech slur, medical condition, whatever you want to call it. I've talked about this a lot, so excuse me if I want to get through this quickly. And it's a very good thing. Good or bad, let's start with the bad news. Bad news is I have no idea what I have. The good news is I don't have a stroke, I don't have a tumor, I don't have cancer, I don't have a brain clot, none of the above. So no idea what's causing the spleech. It's like speech and bleach put together. Anyways, no idea what's causing the speech slurring and things like that, but it's not lethal. I don't have anything wrong with my brain. They did a scan and everything. I went to the hospital. So that is good. So thank you for the people who have followed up with me. Have no idea what's causing it, but it's not a brain issue. I don't have anything crazy. I guess we'll have to wait until I talk to the neurologist in a couple of weeks, but I'm not dying. So forgive me if every now and then there's a slur in there. Just know I'm not dying. Now, moving on to we got some big articles, and I just want to jump right into the first one. And our first article is this. Again, also, I forgot. Before we jump into any of these articles, know that all links to these articles are in the show notes description. So please don't take my word for it. Take my word as a loose foundation, even though I'm kind of educated in this, but please take my word as a grain of salt and go and read these articles for yourself. I can't cover the entirety of these articles, but I recommend you to read these articles. And with that said, let's jump into our first one. Inflation-driven tax bracket is a good thing? Now, no one is talking about this, and I would classify this as big news. Now, this article is posted in the show notes, but to kind of give you the big main key points of this article, no one's talking about it, and for 2025, this goes into effect 2024, so when you file taxes in 2025, you will see these effects. And essentially, higher portion of your income will be taxed at lower rates. So, for example, this is how I understand it. This is a W, I guess, but I must be missing something because no one is talking about it. So how it works is, let's say, I don't know if this is not true, but this is for example purposes. Let's say 20K is a tax bracket. That's like the top end of whatever tax bracket. Doesn't matter. So let's say you made 20K in $1. Adjusted for inflation, that would be like 22K or 21K, something like that, which would put you in a new tax bracket, correct? Not with this. So let's say you make 20K a year, right? Just for simplicity. And with inflation, that's like 21K, which would put you in a new tax bracket. With inflation, you wouldn't be taxed at that higher tax bracket. So you make 20K, and inflation is really 21, but you'll be taxed on 20K instead of 21 because of inflation. Now, that's how I understand it, and that's how I see it. That's a W, right? That's a W. And that's if you're married. Single people, if you didn't know, you'll know it now. Single people pay a lot more in taxes. For example, I know we're talking a lot of numbers here, right? And I'm a big believer in everyone should pay taxes, right? With that in mind, single people pay a lot more in taxes than married. So if you please, I encourage you again to read the article and watch the video. Single people, if you make over 500K, get taxed for 67%. Now, I know people hate rich people or whatever. Let's think about this clearly for a second, right? If you are making over 500K, do you want to be really giving over half of that to the government? Considering you probably worked hard for that, right? Or you work smart for that. I want to start saying you work smart and not hard, because if you don't know this, this might be a real blow to you, but working harder does not equal more money. Working smarter equals more money. So with that out the way, single people making a lot of money give over half, 67, almost three-fourths of their income to the government. Now, whatever you believe, like I said, we have adult conversations here. That's really high, isn't it? For a single person. Now, of course, there's tax laws that are available to everyone that we can get around that. But is that right? And guess what? Married couples making the same, guess how much they get taxed? Let's say they make 500K put together. They only are taxed 37%. Now, 37% is a lot, because that's almost half. That's almost half if you're married. And we're talking about a lot of money. I want to be aware of that. I definitely don't make that, and I know a lot of the people who listen to the show don't make 500K. If you do, let's talk about it and what you did to get there. But that's neither here nor there. 37% if you make over 500 or 700K a year as a couple, compared to 67% as a single. There's something wrong there, right? Like, that's not the point of this article, but we can be aware and say there's something wrong there. If you're making crazy buku bucks, you don't want to give half of it to the government, right? Okay. Now, back to this inflation-driven tax bracket. No change in the rates and no change in the tax brackets themselves. It's just the numbers within the tax brackets. Like if you make over a certain amount and they tax you. Is this good? I think this is a W for people who are, how do I put this? Poor. Look, there it is. There it is. I'm not dying though. I promise you. And what I mean by poor is, I mean you and me. People who are not making, I mean, even 500K is considered poor, right? Like, let's be real. You're not running anything at 500K. Maybe it might be important in your company, but you're not really rich at 500K. That's just how that is, right? I think this change is better for people in lower tax brackets, which is for sure me and maybe you. I would bet. So it's good. So you're not paying higher taxes. I think this is really good for students who work part-time jobs and they might make over 11K, which is the first tax bracket. Hopefully because of inflation, they won't be taxed at a higher rate. So I think this is really good for part-time workers. I was just a college student. So I think that's good. Does this affect people making buku bucks? No. Does this change really affect tax brackets as a whole? No. Will this change be good for those in the middle to lower end of the tax bracket? Yes. I think it's good for them. So I think this is a good change overall, but it doesn't really change anything about the base of the tax, which is why I don't think this is getting talked about as much. What do you think? Is this a W? Is this an L? Let me know. What do you think? Are you glad you'll be taxed at a lower tax bracket, even with inflation? Or are you a rich person and does this not affect you? Either way, this is worth talking about. I think it's overall, it's not the best news ever, but it is good news for regular schmegular people like me and you. On to our second article of the day, and this is a good one. Insert American meme, oil. Maybe that will be in the title, maybe. But in the article is linked in the show notes, so please go and read this whole article for yourself because it's pretty extensive. Let's jump into the article. Why are oil prices falling while there is a major war in the Middle East? Now, we're not going to talk about the war, what side you're on. This is a finance and economy show, so we're going to look at everything through that lens. But people dying is always an L, no matter what side you believe in. I don't care. People dying is an L. With that, and that for the boomers who might be listening, and I do have a few boomers, people dying is never good, no matter what side you're on. So, with that said, let's jump into the article. The article reads, intense fighting is underway in a region that holds much of the world's petroleum resources. True. Yet after a few days of anxiety following the bloody October 7th raids by Hamas militants in Israel, energy markets have been slumping. I care about you. Don't care what you feel about this. We're just looking at specifically the finance. Again, if you're more interested in the political conversation of this, there's tons of people that do that. Podcasting, YouTube, tons. We don't do that here. So with that said, energy markets have been slumping. Brent crude, which is oil, the international oil benchmark, there it is selling for about $80 a barrel, cheaper than when the fighting started. Now that's interesting. We're having major war in the Middle East where we do get oil, and somehow our oil prices aren't sky high. That's good, but are we favoring money more than people? And I think that's a good conversation. Let's continue. Why aren't prices higher? A main reason an analyst says, doesn't say who, so whoever said this doesn't want their name to be out there. Say your name, get out there. A main reason an analyst says is that the fighting, no matter how vicious, has no disruption to petroleum supplies, leading traders to conclude that there is no threat to oil. And traders come from everywhere. Americas, the Middle East, Canada, anywhere they have cars or need oil, there's your traders. So the whole world is like, yeah, y'all are figuring something out with this whole whatever thing. But our money's good. So do what you got to do. And is that okay? Again, maybe that is definitely a different podcast. But as far as money goes, you're not spending any extra at the pump. And if you are, it's not due to the war, because the war has no effect on oil or the drilling or anything like that of oil. While traders, which is anyone that uses oil, the big like economies, while traders realize there is an increased risk, that hasn't led to a lot of precaution buying. So there was a time about a year ago in the summer when inflation was really high in the U.S. and the States, and gas was really high. I live in L.A., so I can tell you gas was high here. We're not seeing that same pattern that we saw a year ago, at least in the U.S. And again, I'm going to say the quote with the person who said it. While traders realize there is an increased risk because of the war in the Middle East, that hasn't led to a lot of precautionary buying, said Richard Bruns, head of geopolitics. And I bring this article up, and I think it would be good to know, even though there are controversial political moves happening, that doesn't necessarily affect the finance or economy of the entire world. Is it an L? Yes. Does it really suck? Yes. Is it affecting our finances? No. Is that a problem? Is that a problem? Should it affect our finances or shouldn't it? And I pose this question to hear back from you. I pose this article mainly to hear back from my listeners. And what do you guys think? What do you think? Is this a W that it's not affecting oil, or the war is not affecting any oil? Or should it be affecting, or should it not, and we should be more hands-on with it? Now, again, whatever side you believe in, don't care. That's not the point of this podcast. The point is of this podcast is strictly money. If you want to learn about politics, there's plenty of other places to do that. But me, personally, what I think, yeah, this is a W, of course, so we're not paying for more at the gas. But that feels bad to say. I don't know if that's just me, or if other people think that, but yeah, people are dying, which is, I don't care who you believe in or what side you're on, people shouldn't be dying. Innocent people shouldn't be dying. And you have these, but hey, oil's good. That doesn't feel right to me. I don't know what to call it, but that does not feel right. How do you feel? Do you agree with me? Do you disagree with me? I would love to have that conversation with you. And for our last article, this is a beefy one. Again, the notes for this, the article is in the show notes, so please read it. But the labor market has recovered from COVID. We all remember COVID, but it's not the same. This is a beefy article. I recommend you to read it all. But I think this is very pertinent to you. Pertinent, that's a word of the day. That means important, or that means it makes sense for us to be talking about it, like it's pertinent for you. For example, I work in startups and stuff, so business about startups would be pertinent to me. It would be important to me, etc. So, that's your big word of the day. With that in mind, let's jump into the article. The labor market has recovered from COVID, but it is not the same. The article reads, the COVID-19 pandemic threw the market for a loop. In the spring of 2020, the virus was declared, as we all know, so like March, and unemployment swelled by 23 million and jobless rate reached up to 15%. Many people did remote work. Remote work was a very big thing, and that's here to stay. So today, the unemployment rate is about 3.9%. The month before, it was 3.8%. So we went up by 0.1%. And that is actually considered a very strong unemployment rate. That's everyone wants to work, which is good, I would say, that people want to work. The balance between supply of labor and demand from employers has returned to a level of normalcy. Although there is still tightness in some industries among some demographic groups. And we'll go into some of those here. One, remote work is here to stay. And what do I mean by that? Let's talk about it. Perhaps the signature change of the pandemic, the percentage of workers who work fully remote is estimated to be about 13% by the government. However, private surveys find that number is substantially higher, closer to a third of the workforce is remote. About 50% of the workforce, and this is according to the government, is hybrid. So they work some days at the office and they work some days at home. Before the pandemic, so right now it's like 33, 34% remote workers. Before the pandemic, 17% of the workforce was work from home. Remote work is here to stay. I don't think that's changing. As someone who works remotely and seen remote work, that's staying. Number two, younger workers are working. Let's go Gen Z. Let's go millennials. There's a misconception. Who posted this article again? I don't see it in my notes, but thank you. Thank you for that. young people, we do want to work and we don't want to work. That is true. This year has seen some of the strongest improvements in teenage employment, with the ratio being about 16 to 17 and those 18 to 19, 16 to 19 pretty much, at 24% working. So about a quarter of all 16 to 19 year olds are working, a quarter of them. And for those aged in 18 to 19, about 44% of them are working. Hey, good. College degree is not as important. So many, many jobs are looking for workers right now, and college degrees are not mentioned. This could be good or this can be bad, but in the general census, there are over 10,000 job openings that offer salaries of 200K or more that do not require a four-year degree. Now, that title's a little red herring. It's a little misleading because, yeah, there are 10K jobs that offer 200K or more without a four-year degree. But guess what you'll need for that? I can guarantee you. Experience. So, that job, yes, experience. So that is a little misleading, but true nonetheless. Less college degrees are needed and more experience is wanted. That's interesting. Women are back. There is no question women fared badly during the pandemic. Many had to stay home or cut back on work to handle kids whose schools were closed, as well as perhaps taking care of elderly relatives. Sectors where women have traditionally been employed at higher rates, such as caregiving, healthcare, education, hospitality, suffered the most from lockdowns. But with that coming back, women have come back in full force to around 40% more than the previous woman employment. That is good. More women are getting back into jobs. Hey, W in my books. Men are doing better, but still lack their historical strength. For men, it's a case of a glass half full or half empty. Men's employment has recovered from the early days of the pandemic, with their employment to population level now at 86%. But that is just below the pre-pandemic rate of 86. So I rounded. What the men employed in the U.S. is 85.9%. But before the pandemic, it was 86. So it's pretty much the same. And if you go, here's the interesting part. And if you go way back to the 1970s, I wasn't even born yet, that ratio was 90% or better. So 90% of men had a job in the 70s. Interesting. Men will have to think about that one a little bit. And lastly, retirees are still retired. At the height of the pandemic, the number of retired Americans who otherwise might have been in the workforce stood around 3 million or more. So 3 million retired people. And those 3 million retirees stayed the same. There was really no change in that. So, and of course, you know, boomers, they have more money. They worked in a way different time period. And they were fine. Retirees were fine. Jumping to the end of the article, is this sustainable? And it quotes, I'm drinking coffee and a pastry, so, you know, it's not, it got my throat. Anyways, the article finishes, while the labor market has performed a strong cyclical recovery from what was the most disruptive hit ever, COVID, there are still structural forces that could keep the balance between supply and demand for labor tighter in the years to come. These include an aging population, lower birth rates, and political opposition to immigration. Interesting. We should have talked about how many jobs immigrants have. That should have been in this article. I don't know off the top of my head, but I think that's an interesting conversation. That means some of the gains seen over the past 3 years could prove long-lasting. The long story short, please read this article for yourself. It goes a lot more in depth, so please read it for yourself. It is linked in the show notes. The labor market has recovered, but it won't be the same. And I can tell you that's not based on remote work, because that's what I do, and it's not the same. A lot of more companies are more open to remote first, and a lot more companies are open to the 50-50 work here, work from your house. So what did we talk about? We talked about the inflation tax bracket. We talked about oil prices not being changed, even though there's war. And we talked about the labor market and how it won't be the same ever since COVID. Those are your three, a slower week this week, but those are three of the most important notes that you should know from this current week, this past week. And with that, you are more educated and you're ready for your future. And you know what's going on around the world with money, which we all need to survive. So with that said, please share the show to your socials and tag at Kyle the Horton on Instagram, Twitter, anything like that, or X, you know, whatever that's called. Please tag me. I will love you forever. Please review the show. Let me know if you loved it or hated it down below in Spotify or Apple or wherever you are listening to your favorite podcast. Again, thank you guys so much for the love. We will get past all the health things. But until then, we got a show to run. So thank you guys so much for showing your love and support. We talk about some good things, and I'll see you guys next time on Fight Time. Peace.